We talked about acceptance and gratitude and affirmation, consideration, communication, and physical affection are needs that both a husband and a wife have. And those are met in different ways with different people. Now, today we want to talk about a unique need that a husband has in the relationship that the wife does not have, and one that the husband has that the wife does not have primarily, and vice versa, that the wife has but the husband does not. And the need that a wife has is the need for leadership. And I didn't keep count, but numerous times over the years that George and I were counseling, not only staff, but key couples around in conferences, I lost count of how many wives said, I'd give anything if my husband would really take the leadership in our home. I believe that many wives who seem to, quote unquote, be wearing the pants in the family are not doing it because they really want to, but it's because they're forced to. Now, I know that there's shades of that in a lot of directions. There are some women that are extremely angry, and they manipulate, and they want to press the limits, and they want to see how far they can go in conquering. But I don't think it's anywhere near the majority. I think that's only a few that do that. But most women, because of the way God has made them and the purpose for which He created them, they want a leader. They want someone who will both lead them and love them. And so this morning I want to talk about what leadership is and what it is not, because that is confusing. I really believe that a lot of the chauvinism and the feminism that's going on today is reacting against a caricature of the concept, not the reality of it. I don't know a woman in the world that wouldn't love to submit or adapt or whatever you want to call to a man who would love the way Christ loved the church. The way He would lead and love, the way God intended a husband to. But a lot of the problems today with kids and everything, I really believe the root problem starts with the fathers and the husbands. Because they've sold themselves to mammon, to position, to making a success, being somebody, filling a personality need in their life. And 100 years ago or 50 years ago, they got that fulfillment on the farm. And the husband and wife worked together. They were in it together. And the wife's needs were met because the husband was achieving. He was providing for his family. The crops were coming up. And the wife's fulfillment was that she was a part of her husband's life and leaning on him. And so, boy, the family life that I hear my grandmother and grandfather talk about back in the old days, it's a lot different today with the fragmented family. But in our day, I think the big problem, both with delinquent kids and with feminism running rampant even in the body of Christ, the guilt comes back to lie at the doorstep of the husband and the father. But let me talk just for a little bit this morning on what leadership is not. First of all, leadership is not dictatorship. It is not leading the home with an iron fist. There's a little poem. I don't even know who wrote it, but most of you have heard it, but let's just review it. Woman was created from the rib of man. She was not made from his head to top him, nor out of his feet to be trampled upon, but out of his side to be equal to him, under his arm to be protected, and near his heart to be loved. And leadership is not dictatorship. Secondly, leadership is not making unilateral decisions. Jerry and I both know a man and his wife. They're Christians. They're wonderful Christians. In fact, the man, if he were here this morning and we started talking about Jesus, he would start crying. You'd see tears just flowing down his cheeks. So tender to Jesus. But all of his life, He has made unilateral decisions. Now, he has a wife that has a very good head on her shoulders. She's got a good business sense. She's got good counsel. But for most of the years of his life, he never asked his wife for her counsel. He'd come in and announce, we're moving here, we're going to move there, we're going to buy this, or I have bought this. Usually, he'd already say, I have bought this. And in the latter years of his life, one day, sitting and talking to his daughter, he looked at her with tears in his eyes, and he said, honey, how can a man know the will of God for his life? And down in her heart, she wanted to say, well, Dad, you could have a lot of times if you had just asked Mom. Not that Mom had the will of God, but Mom had counsel. But a lot of times men think, well, to be the leader, I just go out and I make unilateral decisions. Well, you know, even in the NAVs, we're learning more and more that leadership is not making unilateral decisions. It's bringing the people in on it. And leadership is top-down. It's bottom-up. It's grassroots involvement. But somebody has to be responsible. And the leader is responsible. And we'll come back to that in a minute. But I want us to clarify the fact that leadership is not making unilateral decisions. And then thirdly, it's not always being right or the best in everything. It's not always being right and the best in everything. One day, I had a couple in their late 20s to come in. And you know, usually when you sit down and you're going to do some marriage counseling and somebody wants some counsel, they're going to kind of test you, put up a little test balloon to see how you deal with that, and then they'll get to the real problem. And you kind of want to kind of identify and let them know you're human and so that they'll feel free to share with you. And so the first sometimes 10 to 20 minutes is kind of spent in kind of working in to get positioned to really talk heart to heart. Amenities and that type of thing. Say, would you like a cup of coffee? Where are you from originally and all that, see? Well, this particular day, this couple came in and flopped down in the chair and looked up and said, well, let's bypass all the small talk, Jim, and we're going to get right to the problem. He said, I am threatened in our marriage. Because he says, out of every 10 good ideas that we have in our marriage, 9 of them come from my wife. And he said, very frankly, I'm threatened by that. And he said, she has all these ideas, and I'm the leader in the home, and yet I'm not having all these ideas. And of course, as we talked for about 5 or 10 minutes, I saw what he was talking about. I mean, this girl, her mind was so pregnant with ideas. I mean, boy, she was just, you could just see him emanating. And she looked at me and she said, well, Jim, I want him to be the leader, but it seems foolish to me to throw good ideas out the window and use other ones simply because he wants to be the leader. And she says, I don't know what to do. I just am what God made me. And I sat there and I thought, boy, God, he really does have a problem. Because this guy was, you know, kind of just a good guy. I mean, he was great. But his wife, boy, she was smart. And that was one of those times. I'd never run into that before. And I shot up a word of prayer. I said, oh, God, how do I answer this? How do I answer it? How's that guy going to be the leader in that home? And usually, I remember Leroy Iams several years ago said, when you pray and God gives you an idea, you usually test it. Check it out, because it's usually a good one. So I was praying, and God dropped this idea in my mind, and I looked at him, and I said, now, wait a minute. What is a leader? Is a leader the one who always has the good ideas? No. A leader is one who recognizes a good idea when he sees it. And secondly, he's the one who makes the decision, we're going to use that idea. But I said, you've got to be on your toes, because when that 10th idea comes, it's not a good one. You've got to say, no, that's not a good idea. We're not going to do that one. We'll do this one. So take charge, brother. Take charge in your home. Thank God that he gave you a wife with a wonderful mind. She can be a resource to the marriage. Thank God that he gave you a wife like that. And then I turned to her and I said, use that for the glory of God and to support your husband and to be a resource in the relationship as a partner together, joint heirs. But I warned her, I said, you could very easily, as the weeks and months go by, you could begin to think that you're the head because you have all these ideas. And if you ever do that, I just want to warn you ahead of time, God will take you down several notches. So don't ever let that happen. So leadership is not always being right or the best in everything. It's being willing to take the responsibility. Now, let me get into what leadership is in the home, in the marriage relationship. And first of all, I think leadership is setting the pace in devotion and character. It really disturbs me that today in Christianity, that it's the women who are in all the Bible study groups. You go to a city and, man, you sometimes find 5, 6, 7, 8 Bible study groups of women to every one group for men. I like what Bob Foster said several years ago of why do women outnumber men on the mission field 3-1? It's not because men say, no, God, I won't go to the mission field. It's long time before that they say, no, God, I won't follow you day by day in my devotion to you. And it doesn't seem to me that a husband is being the leader in his home if the wife is the one doing all the interceding and the praying and the meditating and Bible study, and he is out even in the ministry, leading the ministry. So a leader is the high priest in the home as well as the prophet. And he is to set the pace in devotion and character. And boy, kids will not pick up what we say. They pick up what we do. And this is an illustration that many of you have heard many times, but it's just a little one that could illustrate a number of inconsistencies in our lives. But the wife who answers the telephone and then covers it over and says, are you here? And he says, no, I'm not here. Well, no, he's not home. And then we jump all over the kids for lying later on something, and yet the husband and the wife have got these little gimmick things that they work displaying breaches of integrity of character. And husbands out there in the business world day by day, you know, they see rug pulling and all this. And a godly man in a home is one who not only looks at his devotional habits and sets the pace, but in his devotional life to a person, the person of Jesus Christ, in his character. And then secondly, leadership is assuming the loving responsibility for his wife's well-being in every area of her life. In Proverbs 27:23, I realize the primary interpretation here was in a rural society where a man needed to make sure that he really knew what was going on with his cattle so that, to know it. But the writer here says, know well the condition of your flocks and pay attention to your herds. The word condition there, literally in the Hebrew, means the face. Know well the face of your flocks and pay attention to your herds. But I like the condition. Husbands, right here in the room, nav husbands. Do we really know today how our wife feels about her relationship with God? Do we know what she would like to be doing in scripture memory and meditation but can't seem to get to it because of the dishes and dirt and diapers? And what would she really like? Do you know, it was after 20 years that I woke up one day to realize that my wife had been crying out for 20 years that she wanted to deepen her ability to witness and evangelize. And I kept thinking, honey, you've been through classes at Glenary back in the old days when we had courses on the bridge and all that. And Jerry just for years kind of had a fear and an anxiety of knowing exactly how to witness to strangers and our people here and there and to really get into the gospel. She's a navigator wife. But back in the days when we were really witnessing on the campus at the University of Nebraska and University of Maryland, Jerry was usually home with two babies and diapers, and I just didn't realize that the ministry had passed by her and she had this area in her life. And I really woke up to this about a year ago. And Jerry said, honey, they have an EE class over at this such and such church. Do you think it'd be all right if I got into that? And I encouraged her to get into that. And boy, how I thank God for that. Jerry witnesses to everything that moves now. And she's so comfortable in it. Every time we get on a plane, she starts talking to the guy. And she said she felt like that it just really gave her some tools and handles that she's confident now in presenting the gospel. Well, see, I condemn myself in a sense, because why didn't I hear that 15 years ago? That she had that need in her life. And so I'm thrilled that need is met now. But I must assume the loving responsibility for my wife's well-being in every area of her life. And that means probing, asking questions, letting her tell me how she feels about her growth. And leadership is also taking the responsibility for the decision-making in the home. Now, it doesn't mean the husband makes all the decisions, but he takes the responsibility to see that they are made. And there are certain areas of decision-making in the home that a husband can delegate that to his wife because she has the ability or wants to lift that load. And by the way, we'll come to this in a few minutes just in a practical way, but I honestly, before God, I don't see how anybody makes it financially without a budget and some kind of form of control of finances in a home. Somehow we hobbled by for several years, but for the last 10, we've had just a system that's kind of simple. Well, it isn't simple. It takes a few hours a month to work it. But just knowing where we are on our budget in the family. And but you see, unless a wife... Now, a wife may have an ability to set that up, but it's the husband's responsibility to see that the money is spent responsibly in the family, and to see that that decision is made. In our case, what each year I do, because this isn't a natural knack with Jerry, is I'll work on the budget and I'll make a few adaptations, a little more in food and maybe a little less in clothing or something like that. But then Jerry and I sit down and I want to see how she feels with that, because we're going to have to both cooperate with it. And then we sit down and talk about it, and then I make the decision. Then, okay, then this is what we're going to operate on. But a husband needs to take the responsibility that all decisions are made and made responsibly. Thirdly, he needs to take the responsibility for problems in the family. It doesn't mean he solves all the problems, but he sees to it that those problems are solved. If Johnny's having trouble getting his homework done at school and notes keep coming home that he doesn't have his homework done when he goes to school, now, the wife may get in and deal with that, but the husband needs to communicate to the wife that he knows what's going on and is concerned about that. But boy, how many wives have said, boy, it bothers me that my husband doesn't even care what's happening to the kids. Well, he says he does, but he capitulates and abdicates the responsibility by not even getting involved. And I feel that if someday Jerry just says, honey, I just don't know what to do with Jimmy, he is driving me up the wall, then boy, at that moment, I need to get in that ring and get that problem solved and lift for her at that point. Now, it may be that I don't go to him. Maybe I say, well, honey, what are you doing with him? And talk about it and say, well, maybe if you did this, do you think that would help? You know, coming back to that physical affection thing yesterday, I have found in our marriage that the times when Jerry feels the warmest to me was times when we weren't even thinking about physical affection. But when she'd have a problem with something in the household or one of the kids, and if I just stop and communicate that I'm emotionally involved with you in this thing, and we sit down, hear the problem, and then ask the Lord for wisdom to say, well, honey, maybe if you do this and this and this, I think that might... maybe that'll solve the problem. Why don't we try that? And she says, boy, I think that's a good idea. And then we stop and pray. And maybe we've been talking about 20, 30, 45 minutes. And then Jerry just melts. I mean, she just feels so close to me. And I to her. And I think those are connected. The leadership in the home and physical affection are tied in together. Because the husband... if we get involved in the decision-making and the problem-solving with the kids, the budget, whatever it is. Now, if she can handle it and that's kind of her realm and she's doing okay, well, then fine, stay out of it. But we need to be sensitive if our wives want us to get in there if there is a problem. Then fourthly, example. Developing our wives, decision-making, problem-solving, that's four. But let me say fifthly, that leadership is something that is given to you, not something you can demand. Several years ago, a man of God, if I mentioned his name, you'd know him, and every one of us in this room have the highest respect for him. But he was talking with his wife one day after they'd been married several years, and he said, "Honey, I really think you should do such and such." And she said, "Well, I just don't want to." And he said, "Well, honey, you don't have to then." You know, that puts tremendous pressure back on the wife. Now, there are some areas of life. In other words, there are some areas where a wife must. You can't just let a person go. But there's a lot of things in life that are really arbitrary. There's certain times when I think something is best, but really it's a very subjective thing. There's not really particularly any scriptural basis for whether it's right or wrong. You could buy it or not buy it. But what I'm saying here, and I want to say it sensitively so that you don't think that I'm saying that you run into a roadblock and then you just abdicate. But I think that there are times when God may want to speak to a wife and you let her know where you stand, but you may let her make a mistake to learn the lesson. And in saying it, I wanted to be very careful of to not communicate something I don't mean to communicate. But what I'm trying to say is that leadership is something that's given to you. People follow because they desire to follow. They have given it to you. And on the other hand, I heard about the man who one time said to his wife, "Woman, submit to your husband." See, I'm not sure any husband has the right to say that in that tone. You see, I am the head. I am the one responsible for my wife. And if she chooses to not follow me and goes out from under, to use Bill Gothard's term, the umbrella of my protection, Satan will shoot at her. And if I'm under there praying and loving her, she'll come running back, repentant. It's dangerous out there to run out from under your leadership. I think the longer I live, the more I think there really is such a thing as leadership, structure, responsibility, protection. See, right now, I have protection. Now, I told someone one day, I said, "I have no plans to leave the Navigators. Man, I love the Navs. 10 or 12 years ago, I was all bent out of shape over some Navigators. And God taught me some things that I had to learn in that too. But I did say, if God ever did lead me out of the Navs, I'd want to make sure that I'm not just running out into the open. I want to have another protection over there so that they move right up together. And the very day that I move out from under this one, I move under this one. I want somebody responsible for my soul." But I believe in that very strongly. I believe that kids who rebel, that's why Satan gets at them. Because Satan can't get at a child. I told my kids a few months ago, I said, after now 21 years of rearing kids, I think if I could give a child one piece of advice that would make him happy and make his life as smooth as possible for the rest of his life in his relationship to God and people and everybody else, is if he could learn to say one thing with a good attitude. Just one thing. And that is, "Yes, Mom," or "Yes, Dad." If you just learn to say, "Yes, Mom," and "Yes, Dad." Well, and a wife needs to realize she's under the protection of her husband. But you see, I can't say, grab by the collar and say yes. See, it's something that out of the heart. See, Jesus has never said, "Hey, down there. Now, if I don't obey him and adapt to him, then boy, the day comes when I run back with my tail between my legs, bruised and shot through." But God never demands that I obey him. So leadership is something that must be given to you. It is not something that you demand. See, I think what happens, a widow, that's why, boy, it is so, I know a man today that took his mother's inheritance, what the father had when the father died, and he squandered it. He squandered his mother's whole income and acted very irresponsibly. And boy, I tell you, I've just been waiting for lightning to fall. I just think, I tell you, there's probably nothing in the world that could be more horrendous than to mistreat a widow. Why? Because God has become her protector. And that protector will not let anybody mistreat that widow. You see. So, what can happen to a leader? Let's say that one of the men in my region, our region here, the Western region, he just is in rebellion. He doesn't want to do this. Well, you see, I can get in there and twist his arm and all that. Or I can say, "You're fired." Or I can go over here and I can say, "God, I can't do anything with him. Well, he's run out from under." I said, "God, why don't you spank him?" And that's exactly what happens. See, I don't have to fight the battle. The battle's not mine. And if a wife rebels and doesn't want to follow her husband's leadership, God will spank her and she'll come back. But I think the point of maybe 2,000 or 3,000 words that I'm saying is here, husbands, leadership is not twisting that wife into submission. But it's letting her give it to you. And I think if we're loving them, I don't think there's a wife that wouldn't want to. Well, God holds us responsible. Hebrews 13:17. Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they that must give an account. And what Jerry said yesterday about, or day before, when she gets to heaven and has to say, God says, "What did you do with the husband I gave you?" You see, I'm going to have to say answer the same question. What did you do with that wife that I gave you? And I have to remember, too, that Jerry is just as much a disciple maker and a laborer in the kingdom as these guys out here that I'm working with. And to help develop her. And God holds me responsible. I think this is important because God created women to need an anchor and consideration. So we do this by dedicating ourselves to our wife's well-being, praying regularly with her and for her, feeding her spiritually, sharing your heart and plans with her, organizing the household schedule and budget, providing for all decision-making, spending time in creative planning for her growth, both spiritually and emotionally, inquiring as to her well-being in all areas and listening closely, getting involved, load lifting, humbly entertaining suggestions and criticism. See, a leader can win the right to lead by being willing to listen when a wife has some suggestions or even constructive criticism. I think we need to be careful or be sure that we confess our mistakes quickly. One of our kids a few years ago was having trouble, not willing to admit when he was wrong. And I was away at a conference and Jerry called me and said, "Honey, I don't know what to do. I don't want to disturb your conference, but this child won't admit he's wrong. He's been disrespectful to me and he will not make it right." And I said, "Put him on the phone." So he got on the phone and I said, "Hey, what's going on?" We talked about it a little bit and he said, "Nothing." And I said, "Well, you've been disrespectful to your mom?" And he says, "Well, I don't think so." And I said, "Well, she does." And I said, "The way it was reported to me, it sounds like you were. Are you going to confess that to her and ask her forgiveness?" And he said, "No, I am not." Boy, I mean, the rebellion was just like this, you see. So I said, now with children, it's a little different. You move in and twist that arm, see. And when he said, "No, I am not," I said, "Where are you right now?" And he says, "Here." And I says, "Well, you go up to your bedroom and you wait. I'll be home in 45 minutes. And man, I dropped that conference and I headed home. I made my way up that stairway, and we sat there and talked for 2 hours, and I mean, he was absolutely just like a brick wall. And so I became like one, and we got nose to nose. And I said, no kid in my family is going to be disrespectful of his mother and eat in this house. So you stay up in your bedroom and you get no breakfast tomorrow morning until you come down and ask your mother to forgive you. And if you don't do it by breakfast, then you don't eat lunch and then you don't eat supper. You won't die, but you're going to get hungry until you confess that to your mother and admit what you did. Confess your sin. He said, Dad, I'm not doing it. I said, fine, make yourself at home. So I went out. And boy, the next day he got hungry, and sometime in the afternoon he came down and he said, Mom, I'm sorry. So Jerry and I got together and thought, why in the world is that kid so stubborn? Why did it take 24 hours almost to break that will and get him to confess that? And Jerry said to me, she said, honey, I wonder if you and I are always being quick to admit when we're wrong. And we began to discuss it and examine it, and we had really gotten sloppy about that. And so when we started being careful to admit it when we had made mistakes, take responsibility for our wrongdoings, the kid just snapped out of it, and I don't think we've had a problem with him since. Oftentimes God will use our children as a mirror to reflect our own problems, only in a much bigger, less sophisticated way. But being a leader in the home, you know, the world's leadership, the military, they say, boy, never admit your weaknesses. People won't respect you if they do. But you know, in the kingdom, it is just the opposite. When you make mistakes, people don't respect you if you don't take the responsibility, and they do respect you when you do. I think it's that way in the world too, but they don't believe that. Then take her needs to God daily and listen for His ideas. And all right, Jerry's going to come up now and talk about the husband's need. Now, in a sense, let me say this. This is qualified. This need that a husband has, a wife also needs it, but not nearly to the degree that a husband does. And scripturally, it's more in her role that God has given her as a wife than it is for the husband. But there are times when the husband needs to do this for his wife too. And it's the principle of adaptation.
Probably the word that we're used to hearing and a lot of women kind of freeze up on is the word submission. You know, you hear that word, and the first thing that women see in their minds is a man who is coming down with an iron fist on him and who's very authoritarian and insecure. The very fact that they're authoritarian makes you feel, well, they must be insecure. They wouldn't have to be that way. And we tend to think of a wife in terms of the word submission as someone who is over-dependent and unable to think on her own. These are just very quick mental images, aren't they, that come to our minds when we hear this word. And I think the reason why is because it is a word that has not been adequately explained over the years. You know, it's been thrown out and yet not really put into a proper context so that it's understood. Because the word submission is a good word. I mean, it's used in the Bible, and it's a legitimate word and a good word. But sometimes we have to use another word if what the word we're using does not communicate what we want it to communicate. And because of that, we use the word adaptation, because it does mean the same thing. And the definition of adaptation is to adjust to changes, to flex, to fit in, to harmonize, to complement. And you know, I often get in my own mind when I think about this, I think about an orchestra, and I think about all the different instruments in an orchestra, and then I think, here's this one little instrument, say a piccolo, and the piccolo wants to be the whole orchestra. You know, it wants to be louder and stand out, and, you know, everything else has to kind of submit to that. And when we're not learning to adapt and to harmonize, this is the kind of picture that we can give, I think, especially as women. When we're demanding our rights and we're defending ourselves and we're not willing to adapt to our husbands and to get behind them and support them in what God has called them to do, then we're kind of like that little piccolo that just wants to be the whole show. We demand attention for ourselves. And God says, you know, you don't really have to do that. I'll meet your needs and I'll see that you have the attention you need if you don't demand it. Ephesians 5:22-24 says that wives are to be subject to their husbands in everything, or to adapt to them in everything. And like Jim mentioned, this does not mean that the husband does not adapt to the wife, because I can think of many ways that Jim adapts to me. At times when he sees me under pressure, he will just kind of get alongside and help me. We had a dinner in our house a couple of weeks ago, and the people left a little bit late. Well, you know, he could have gone to the office or to the bedroom and thought, well, I've got this early morning deal and I've got to get my sleep. And I wouldn't really have blamed him if he had. I would have thought, yeah, he does need to, and I would have whipped into it and got it in shape. But he came out in the kitchen and he stayed with me in cleaning up the mess until everything was taken care of. And it gave us some neat time together too. But, you know, I thought he adapted to me in that situation in my responsibility. And he often does this, and I really appreciate it. And I think when a husband is sensitive to his wife in ways like that, of also adapting to her need, he really helps himself, because it causes his wife to feel very warmly toward him, very grateful, very tender. And that really is to his advantage, isn't it? You guys really reap the benefit from that in many ways. So we need to do that for each other. But to me, it is clear in the Bible that God has especially given the wife a role of adaptation. This is our role. And I consider it a very honorable role. In 1 Corinthians 11:3, it says, the head of the woman is the husband. There's a young wife down in Norman that I get together with, and she's come a long way since I've known her in this whole area. But she's still struggling with some things. And anytime something comes up on the idea of the wife adapting to her husband, you know, she'll immediately say, but the Bible also says that we're to adapt to each other. Just kind of like that, you know. She's really quick to bring that up. And then we have to say, yes, that's right. But the Bible does put more of an emphasis on this being the wife's role. And sure, we're to adapt to each other. But this is our God-given role as wives. And I don't know of any verses in the Bible where it says the wife is to be the head of the husband, for example. Do you know of any? I haven't run across any like that. And so I think it's made clear in Scripture. Being an adaptive person as a wife does not mean being a slave, a yes girl. Do you know that when Jim and I got married, this is one of the things that I was afraid of. I remember thinking in my mind, now when I get married, I'm not going to be a yes girl. I mean, I had that figured out. And I had made that decision. I was not going to be a yes girl to Jim. And I probably was saying it with a spirit of pride and stubbornness too. And this isn't what God wants. I really believe that. But at the same time, I feel a responsibility to Jim to inform him of things I think he may not be seeing or noticing. In other words, I am to submit to him, to adapt to him, but I'm also responsible to be honest with him. And if I see an area in his life that I feel is going to hurt him in the long run, maybe an attitude, maybe a way of looking at things, then I feel responsible before God to go to Jim and to say, honey, this is something you might want to be aware of. I think this will help you in the future to think about this. And then I help him. You see, I become a helpmeet when I do that. But for me to back off and just say, well, no, you know, if my husband needs to know anything, God will have to say it through another man, or he'll have to do it in another way. Nobody knows Jim like I know him. And there are certain things that I see and know about him that you will never see and never know about him. And because of that, I feel responsible. But again, it needs to be done in the right way too, at the right time. Being adaptive is not an inferior position. It is a matter of role. Equality is not sameness. We are equal, but we're not the same. God has created us differently. It is not giving up the opportunity to develop as a person. And here I feel like husbands need to be aware of this too, you know, to be sensitive in helping your wife adapt as a person so that she grows in confidence. It's doing everything you can to help your husband be a success in his life and work. And in return, God will give you your life. There's a verse in Jeremiah 45:5 that I really like. It's one of my favorites. It says, "And are you seeking great things for yourself? Seek them not. For behold, I will bring evil upon all flesh, but your life I will give to you as a prize every place you go." And I ask God often to remind me of that. Lord, help me not to feel like if I don't step in and help you here, that my needs are not going to be met. And you know, sometimes we have a hard time admitting this as women, but we just feel like, well, yes, I want to submit, but you know, if I don't say something here, or if I don't defend myself in this situation, he's going to walk all over me, you know. And God probably expects me to step in here and help him in this situation. And it can be faulty thinking. And we need to trust God in those things. It's important to be adaptive, to adapt to our husbands, because it's in obedience to God's command and it pleases him. And I think this is the foremost thing that we need to remember, that whatever we do, we are doing it first of all in order to please God, in obedience to his command. Another thing is that nothing works well with two heads. Every institution, like Jim says, needs a structure to it. And it causes our husbands to prosper. And if one isn't converted, I think God can definitely use us to bring that man to the Lord. In fact, Jim and I know of a situation of a couple in Florida. And the wife had not been submissive or adaptive to her husband over the years, for several years. And one day she heard a message on this and she went home and apologized to her husband. And she said, "I realize that I have been looking at this wrongly over the years. And," she said, "I want to ask your forgiveness." And she said, "From now on, you know, I want to honor you as the head of the family, and I want to adapt and submit to you in our marriage." Well, it just about bowled him over. He'd never heard that before. And that was the very thing that brought that man to the Lord, was her switch in attitude. It wasn't her sitting down and giving the bridge to him, but it was this whole change of her attitude toward him. And he thought to himself, "Boy, what has happened in my wife's life, there has got to be something to Christianity. If it can do that for her, it's got to be real. I've got to find out about this." And he came to know the Lord. Well, talking about it and doing it, sometimes it's so much simpler, isn't it, just to talk about it and agree with it mentally. But then when it comes down to the daily living out and putting these things into practice, that's where the crunch comes in. But we can keep some things in mind in this. One is to, as women, to dedicate ourselves to our husband's physical, spiritual, and emotional needs as to the Lord. Just like giving the Lord a gift, we can do this as to him. And Ephesians 5:22 mentions that, to do it as unto the Lord. And we can plan, another way is to plan our schedules in consultation with our husbands. And Jim mentioned the idea of not making unilateral decisions. Well, this can go for the wife too. See, I feel like there are a number of things in our marriage that I don't have to run to Jim on every little thing and say, "Jim, can I run to the store? And Jim, can I buy this thing and that?" I know there are a number of things that I don't need to bug him with. And it's helpful to him for me not to be over-dependent on him. But at the same time, I don't want to be independent either. And there are certain things that I know that I need to check with him on. And having people over for dinner, I need to be considerate of the strain this might put on him at a certain time if he's getting ready to leave on a trip or he's tired or whatever. And to plan in consultation with him. Another thing is to present our ideas lovingly and humbly, and not to nag or to push. And we had a situation about 10 days ago, where I presented an idea to Jim, and I thought, as I went in to talk to him about it, I thought, now, this is not really going to put pressure on him, because I'm the one that's going to be with this person, and they'll just be sitting with us through this meeting, and I had it all figured out, because I knew he was tired. And so I just, I mentioned this to him, and he had a reservation on it, and he said, honey, I just don't think at this time that, let's just not do this. And gave his reasons. And I remember at the time feeling irritated, and I just thought, oh, come on, you know, it's not really going to be that big a deal, and you're making too big of a deal out of it. That's what I thought in my heart. I didn't say it. I said, okay, and I walked out, and I went in the bedroom and sat down at my desk. And as I sat there, I felt myself kind of just getting tight inside. You know that feeling when you really want your way and you're not getting your way? And I felt that way as I sat there. And then all of a sudden, I remembered that that I had been praying for several days, for 2 or 3 weeks, that God would help me in the area of meekness in my life this year. This is one of my big requests of the Lord, is I feel I need to grow more in this area. And so as I sat there at the desk, you know, I thought, well, meekness is not pushing to get your way. Whether you say something verbally or not, it is a submission in your spirit to the Lord. And as I sat there, I said, Lord, I really want my way in this. I really wanted to do this. But I pray that you will give me your spirit in this situation and help me to trust you, that you know what is best here. And I gave it to the Lord, and as I did, I felt the peace returning. And I went ahead and had my quiet time, and as I was reading, it's interesting how verses on meekness just sort of kind of started jumping out at me. And I think God is so anxious to help us in needy areas of our lives that if we will just humble ourselves under His mighty hand, like 1 Peter 5:5 says, that He gives us all kinds of support in that process. You know, He'll bring verses to our attention and things to encourage us and help us. And after I made that surrender of that situation to the Lord, you know, it didn't matter at all. I was amazed. And I went to Jim later and I said, honey, you know, after I gave that to the Lord, I really didn't even care. And I really felt that you were right in your decision. And I said, I'm not just saying that to, you know, play act, but I really have a peace about it and I feel right about it. And the issue was over. It was no problem. God also wants us as wives to present our complaints with respect. And this is close to what I was talking about. And to and He says in 1 Peter 2:18, to be submissive to our authority with respect. And it says not only to the kind and gentle, but also to the overbearing and sometimes obnoxious person. But God wants us to not just be submissive in a situation because it's easy to be. But sometimes it's difficult to be that way. And yet out of obedience to Him, we need to be. And I think this also includes situations where your husband may make a decision that you know deep down in your heart is not right. And there have been a few of those. And then even when you go ahead on that decision and it does turn out wrong, you know how tempted you are to say, I told you that wouldn't work. You know, I knew that wasn't going to work. And just to get that little word in that just makes us look so superior, you know, and that we were right all along. And I remember a situation about 7 years ago, I guess, where we bought Jimmy a little car racing set for Christmas. And I felt uneasy about it at the time, and I mentioned it a couple of times to Jim, you know, honey, I don't know. I don't really think he's ready for this. And I just kind of feel like, you know, that maybe this isn't the right thing to get for him. And Jim listened to me, but he thought, oh, yeah, this is really the thing. We should do this. So I didn't say anything, and we went ahead and got it for him. And it did turn out that it wasn't the right thing to get. And I remember that feeling inside. I wanted so bad to say it. I told you so. And it was all I could do not to. But I didn't. I just gave it to the Lord, and I thought, Lord, that would not honor you. I'm not going to say that. And I didn't say it. And, you know, a couple of months later, Jim came to me, and he says, you know, this thing just has not worked out. And he said it was a waste of money, and I shouldn't have got it. And he said, you mentioned that at the time. And he said, you were right. And I thought, you know, you really don't have to defend yourself in these things. God can get through, and he doesn't need us making our little remarks here and there to drive it in. We need to ask advice on hard problems and decisions from our husbands. And then, by the way, when we ask advice, have you ever found yourself saying, honey, what do you think I should do in this situation? And then he'll think about it, and then he'll give you some advice. And then you just find yourself doing the very thing you wanted to do. You didn't really want the advice. You just hoped that he'd agree with you in what you said. Have you ever done that? I've done that a few times. I've caught myself doing that. Or else beginning to argue with him and say, yes, but you don't, you know, what you don't realize is such and such. And the husband can get the feeling that, well, why did you ask me then? You know, I thought you wanted my advice, and you wanted me to tell you what I thought. And so I think we need to be careful in this too. When we ask our husbands for his advice on something, to realize that when we do that, we need to be ready to take that advice. Not just hear it, but to take it and act on it. And then finally, to never go against his will unless it clearly contradicts God's will. Acts 4:19, the disciples were saying to the authorities over them in a city where they were being interrogated, they said, whether it is right to listen to God or to you, you judge, but we must do what God tells us to do. And I can see a situation where a husband might ask his wife to do something that would border on being wrong. You know, maybe it would be an immoral thing or something that would damage her conscience. And this would not be right. And I feel it before God, if it were something clear like that, black and white, that we would need to say to our husbands respectfully, honey, I don't feel right or peaceful about this. I don't feel that God would want me to do this. And can we talk about it? Let's talk about it. And be open about it. But that would probably be the only reason, you know, because God does expect us to adapt, unless it is something that is clearly against his will. A little formula that helps me in this whole subject is, number one, to make my wishes known to Jim in a situation. And then if it is a decision that, say, we disagree on, we don't agree on together, then I need to leave the final decision with him because he is my head. And then in doing that, whether it's something that I agree with or want or not, that my very adaptation to him in this will cause him to feel tender to me, and he will want to maybe recheck his thinking on it or to think it over again. And he will want to do what will meet my needs as well in the situation. I feel that it's a smart wife smart husband that does put confidence and trust in his wife, but it's also a smart wife that will not contend to have her way and not push to have her way in situations, but will realize that God has given her a role of being an adapter. I remember one time in the Springs here, I guess it was about 6 years ago, that I had been looking at one of Don Enright's paintings, and I wanted that so badly. And it was about, at that time, I think it was around the smaller painting, around $350. And we didn't really have the money in our budget for something like that, but I thought about that picture, and the more I thought about it, the more I wanted it. And I remember one day I asked Jim, I said, honey, you know, I really would like that painting. Do you think that we could get that? And he thought about it, and we talked about it, and he said, well, honey, I really don't feel at this time that we should do that. And I remember how I just felt like that inside. I just felt kind of crushed. And I was talking to him on the phone, and when I hung up the phone, I went over to the kitchen sink, and I was standing there doing dishes, and I remember feeling really disappointed inside. And then I just stopped, and I said, Lord, I don't have to have that painting, but, you know, I need to just give this to you, give this situation over to you, And oh, I left something out. Jim told me on the phone, he said, I don't personally feel that we need to make an expenditure like that at this time. But he says, you pray about it, and if you really feel strongly that God would have us do this, he says, I trust your judgment. I want you to know I trust your judgment in this situation, and we will get it if you feel strongly that God would have us do that. And I really appreciated that trust and confidence that he was putting in me. And then I hung up and went to the sink and so forth. And as I was standing there praying about it, I remember feeling a real peace before the Lord in not getting that painting. And I just stood there and I said, Lord, I just give this painting to you. And, you know, I don't want to feel like I have to have this, so I just give it to you. And I gave it to the Lord. I felt a perfect peace about it. I never had another struggle after that. We didn't get the painting, but I felt such a peace about it. But I also felt a deepening love for Jim in my heart and a respect for him, because what he communicated to me was, this is how I feel, but in this situation, I want you to know I really trust your judgment. And because I believe in you. You know, I've studied you for years. I know you, and I really put confidence in you in this decision. And if you feel differently and you feel strongly about it, you go ahead and you'll have my complete support. Well, see, this is a reverse of what we said, the husband wanting to bend over backwards then to meet his wife's needs. But I wanted to bend over backwards at that point to really honor Jim's feelings in that situation. And this is where peace comes in then, you know, in not contending for what we want, but in being willing to give it to the Lord and saying, Lord, what I really want is your peace in this situation, and you're well able to meet my needs if it really is a need.